Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. Today we're talking nutrition. Mealtimes can often be tricky times. Children are notoriously fussy eaters. Mine are great procrastinators, not seeming to take the joy in eating that their parents do, which I find incredibly frustrating. Nowadays, there's a lot of noise around children's nutrition, allergies, intolerances, and the benefits of cutting out food groups. As parents, we all want the best for our children, but how do we know what the best is and how can we achieve that? So with me today, I've got my sister and co-founder, Dr. Kiara Hunt. Hello, Kiara.
Hi.
I've also got Georgie Soskin, a chef, and Joe Saunders, who's a nutritional therapist. Together, they're the authors of Cooking Them Healthy, a website packed full of supercharged recipes which children love. Welcome to The Parenthood, both of you.
Hello.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. So let's start out talking about the importance of what we eat and what goes into us and how that affects us and how that can affect our children. What do we know about the impact of nutrition on humans, specifically children?
Shall I start? As a nutritional therapist, I see a lot of children in my practice, and I also have three children myself. So I get to see very often the impact that nutrition has on long-term health. And I can very easily see, with just a small few tweaks in a diet, how it can improve the health of a child. So most specifically, I think blood sugar balance in children, it's something that we're all familiar with after a birthday party, the very direct impact of sugar and artificial preservatives and things like that, and how it can affect the mood of a child. And if you think how that's further impacting the rest of their body.
And their behaviour and their relationships. And,
absolutely. Yeah. So blood sugar balance is probably the sort of fundamentals of what I do, by ensuring they have protein, good quality protein at every meal, rather than just carbs, which children tend to make a beeline for. Protein is of course very important for growth and repair in young bodies, and also for neurotransmitter production, which is our brain chemical messages. So again, for helping to regulate mood and keep our energy levels stable. So you can really notice on a day-to-day basis, putting the right building blocks in a meal can make a big difference. And focusing on complex carbohydrates, again, with every meal, which helps help stabilise the blood glucose levels as well, but also to keep children's energy levels more stable, and healthy fats as well, which are all really important. So the trio together, try and combine them in every meal and snack where possible. Healthy fats particularly for healthy cognitive function and will help learning and concentration. Those are the things, the sort of three main guys.
So most people sort of hear protein, they think, oh, that means I've got to have meat or fish or something in every meal. But that's not the case, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, obviously, the lovely sources of protein are meat and fish, but you can easily get plenty of protein from vegetable sources, things like lentils and pulses. Eggs are one of my favourites because they're nature's fast food, in my opinion, really versatile. And if your child doesn't like eggs, as they are, you can easily hide them in pancakes and muffins and things like that. Really quick, easy source of protein. Even boiling up some eggs at the beginning of the week and keeping them in the fridge for lunch boxes is a really nice thing to do. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a meat source, definitely not.
Actually, I tell you, I discovered seaweed instead of salt because my daughter likes to have a little bit of seasoning on her eggs. And actually, seaweed is a good source of, is it
iodine.
Protein?
Iodine. Yeah.
Which is sort of beneficial. And she loves the idea that she can put it on herself.
Brilliant, yes. Well, children love that. They love having a bit of control about what they're doing. So I find that really helpful. If you give them a bowl of things, you know, to add... add to porridge, adding nuts and seeds to porridge and things like that's a really good way to boost the protein content.
No, so you could do things like sometimes do like fried rice, things like that. So you might have your rice, but you might have an egg thrown in there and peas, sweet corn, red pepper. And then I always do like a bowl of crispy onions or seeds, cashews. They love it.
Yeah, they love adding their own bits and bobs. So it's a way of boosting sort of classic meals.
That's a great idea.
I mean, we all fall off the wagon at some stage, don't we? I think all four of us sitting around here. I mean, we're recording this in September. My children have had a lot of ice cream over the summer. And I am usually quite mindful about what they eat. Yeah. But that's okay, isn't it? You know, it's not like you have to sort of commit. And if you fall off, it's all negated.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important that summer is exactly that. It's an enjoyable long holiday. Everyone gets a chance to relax. The pressure is off in terms of school runs, time off work. And absolutely enjoy it and kick back. And children tend to have a massive growth spurt over the summer as well from all that lovely vitamin D and lots of running
fresh
around. And it, you know, as a result, we're going to relax our food choices. And I think that's totally fine. But having said that, September being back to school, new term, it's a perfect time to focus on a bit of immune boosting as we head into the colder, darker winter months.
Yeah, so I'll certainly be seeing lots of coughs and colds and flus and things in the next few months of my surgery. And patients are always asking me, you know, what can I do? I don't want to go down the medication route yet because they're not that ill. What sort of things can you tell us about what they can eat or take to help boost their immunity?
Well, even preventative, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, immune boosting was one of our sort of original...
topics
for starting cooking them healthy because Georgie and I had a conversation.
I rang up Joe complaining about my eldest son constantly getting coughs and colds, and I just felt I wanted to be able to do something myself, so rang her up and asked for the top things that she could tell me to help support him. So she reeled off a list of like vegetables and things like that, but also things like bone broths and stocks and things, which, you know, is quite nurturing and nice to make. So I just started filling up our freezer with better things, which was, as I said, very empowering. It made me feel like I was doing something.
So
taking
what, bone broth, what's that? I mean, that sounds very complicated.
So, no, not at all. So it literally would be chicken carcass left over from a Sunday roast, putting it into a big pan, covering it with some cold water, and then throwing in some, like an onion, a carrot, celery. If you have thyme, a bay leaf, and maybe some peppercorns, and bring it up to the boil, down to a simmer, let that simmer away for a couple of hours, and then you've got a bone broth, and then all the nutrients from inside those bones will be going into the wateriness that you've made that broth. And you can use that in risottos, you can use that. I cook a lot of our rice I cook in that, just normally like it would be water.
Add to soups.
Into soups. Yeah, loads and loads of things. And
it's very nourishing. It's very soothing to drink, very nourishing for the gut, and it's got a really good protein profile, amino acid profile. So it's actually a really good thing to eat when a child's not feeling brilliant.
And presumably you can do that. You get quite a lot of it from a bone, from a
Absolutely.
Chicken carcass, and then you just put it in the freezer.
And it frees really well.
And that doesn't destroy the nutrient.
No, not at all. Freezing is brilliant.
And often if you don't have time, if you've just had a Sunday roast and you can't be bothered to, you know, do a stock straight away or a bone broth, I just get the whole carcass and put that into the freezer. And then when I have got time, I just take the carcass out and do it when I've got the time.
That's a good idea. And do you use the vegetables that you've put in there, or do they, as in...
I do, actually, because I always think that they're all kind of saturated and full of all that niceness, and they're quite mushy. So it's kind of easy, if you have got a bad tummy or they're feeling run down, it's quite easy to just take in. But I might throw in some, you know, frozen peas and sweet corn to top it up. Or, you know, if you want to make more of an Asian twist, put some ginger in there to infuse and things like that.
Ginger and garlic are really amazing natural antimicrobials, so we use them as much as possible in our cooking. Also things like honey, that's got a really nice antimicrobial activity as well.
Does it have to be fresh, or can it be the stuff you get in a jar?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Ginger,
if you can,
and garlic.
If you can, fresh is always better. But I know you've got to do what you can. And if you can source local honey, even better. And I know there's lots of people in London who have their own hives. So.
And why is local honey better?
Because the bees are eating the flowers local to you. So it can be really helpful for reducing hay fever symptoms and things like that. So just, yeah, if you first sign of a sore throat, a nice teaspoon of honey, just as it is, or in some warm water with some lemon, that's a really nice thing you can do.
Good. I've got a bit of a cold at the moment, so you can probably hear. And you both said earlier when we were chatting that elderberry you mentioned.
Yes.
Are there any studies behind that? Or?
Yes, there is. It's actually really well studied, particularly for preventing the flu virus, eliminating the flu virus. So it's a brilliant antiviral, and it's also very soothing for the respiratory system, for the throat. And there's some really nice combinations that you can get that are mixed with other respiratory goodies like black pepper and thyme.
Yeah. And it comes as a syrup, does it, like as a cough syrup?
Yes, it comes as a syrup. So you can take it preventatively, much like vitamin D, you'd take it sort of from October to April, and then you'd probably up the dose when you need to, at the first sign of a cough or a cold. But I have used it in clinic for lots of, you know, viral things, and it tends to really help.
What other types of things might you use it for?
Things like molluscum, that's really slow to go. Mm-hmm. Chicken pox.
Yeah.
When the immune system really needs a bit of a boost.
It's very high in vitamin C, isn't it?
Yeah, very high in vitamin C, and polyphenols from the elderberries. And you can make it yourself. We do actually have a recipe for it, but I understand it's not practical for everyone. But it is quite a fun thing to do.
And elderberries, I'm presuming, are the berries from the elderflower
yes,
plant.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, and they're on the trees now. You know, nature's very clever, providing us what we need now. So
in September, in the autumn, they come.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So you can pick the berries and boil them down as they are, and then bottle them with some honey. And it's a great thing to have in the fridge.
Yeah.
Your own natural cough syrup.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Get the children out and about collecting elderberries
yeah,
too.
They love getting involved in that.
Now, on sort of supplements, I suppose, vitamins and minerals, it's a question I'm constantly asked by patients who say to me, you know, is there any benefit in taking vitamins and minerals or giving them to my children? And generally my answer is obviously younger children need vitamin D supplements, and actually through the winter in England most of us do.
Yep.
But as long as you're eating well and healthily and varied diet, you probably don't need any other multivitamin, because they should be getting it anyway in your diet. But
and it's better, isn't it, to get vitamins from your diet as opposed to from a pill?
Yes, always. Yeah. And you know, a vitamin in its food state is always going to be preferable.
It's also in very small quantities in the supplements
yes.
you get.
Yes, so it's like most nutrition questions, there's no easy answer. But I would say that if a child is eating a really good, broad diet with lots of variety, certainly lots of vegetables and some fruit, you shouldn't need to worry necessarily. It's the profile of children that I see do tend to need a bit of help in certain areas. Typically, a lot of them are very fussy eaters, so they may be lacking in certain nutrients. So it is a sort of case by case basis,
and that takes time, doesn't it? I mean, I have patients who are fussy eaters, whose parents just say, "Well, I won't worry about the food, so I'll just give them multivitamins instead."
Yes.
And that's not the answer.
No, I would always encourage doing what you can through food first. I mean, that's what we're totally about. Certainly getting those building blocks in initially, and then worrying about the vitamins and minerals. But as you say, you know, a multi vitamin is only going to have very very small quantities of the nutrients in it. By the nature of the fact it's a very small capsule, and they're putting lots in, so it certainly wouldn't be. It might be something of an insurance policy, but it wouldn't be the answer.
And if your child's sick, or
yeah.
But food first, I think.
Always.
And what about probiotics? I mean, I advise my patients to have them if I'm giving them antibiotics or if there are other reasons. But there are, as we know, lots of natural probiotics in food groups, and we don't have to go to the pharmacy and buy an expensive packet of pills.
It's really lovely to hear that. And it's something I am seeing increasingly, doctors recommending probiotics, which is fab. Because as we know, antibiotics are life-saving, potentially, but they do have an impact on the gut. So
the reason for that is because they're killing the bacteria that are causing the illness, but they're also killing the good bacteria.
Yeah, they're non-selective, so they wipe out the good guys as well, which we need to support our immune system. So I would also recommend probiotics in certain cases, particularly after taking antibiotics, but we also love our fermented foods. And Georgie is a fantastic fermenter. She has a whole kitchen full of
bubbling things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you mean, I have a lot of sourdough, they're called starters at home, which is basically a mixture of water and flour that's been left out in a completely normal environment, and it catches the wild yeast. in the environment, and that is what makes the bread
rise. That's what starts the fermenting process.
Yeah.
So and that's sourdough bread. So that's a type of natural.
Yeah, it's a fermented food.
Fermented food. And then we also make kombucha, which is a fermented tea drink, which sounds a lot worse than it is, and it doesn't taste too bad.
Well, Georgie and Joe actually brought some along. Kira and I had never tasted it. It's very good. It tastes a bit like cider. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is. It does. A lot of people say that.
Cider, of course, is a fermented food.
Exactly. It does taste good. And we also do, we talk about kefirs, and we make homemade kefirs, again, through using these.
So kefirs are yogurt.
It's a fermented milk drink. Yeah, it originates in Eastern Europe. So most cultures have their own version of fermented foods.
Yeah.
And kefir, we find, is much like yogurt, really. So it's probably one of the easier ones to give to children, because you can mix it in smoothies. My children are crazy enough to drink it.
Straight.
That's quite something, because have you tried kefir?
I've never tried it.
It's quite full on. I mean, it's quite a taste.
I remember taking it.
I mean, it tastes a bit like sort of off-yogurt. Milk.
Slightly fizzy milk. So, but in a smoothie with some banana and some berries, you would never know.
Yeah.
And you can also make dressings, salad dressings and things with it, and put it on curries and marinade. It's a brilliant marinade. So, yeah, I mean, my advice would be to try and get as many fermented foods into your diet as possible.
Are there any that you can sort of buy? Because I mean, it sounds like quite a lot of work.
All of those you can buy. Yes. So, you know, the kefir you can definitely buy in any shop.
All supermarkets now, I think.
Miso pastes and things like that. Miso pastes are very good. Yeah. Tempeh. And miso pastes can be delicious just with a little bit of sweetness in, like, some maple, and marinate that on your salmon, for example. It's delicious.
Does miso soup have miso paste in?
Yes.
So is that... Does that count?
And variety, like all things, all aspects of nutrition, variety is key. So if you can try and get a mixture of all the different fermented foods, which isn't difficult. So if you're having some kefir in your smoothie, and then you have salad for lunch with a spoonful of kimchi, which is Korean fermented cabbage, again,
which you can actually get anywhere now. Most of the supermarkets will stop.
But even it
all sounds quite complicated and quite sort of foreign. I mean, even simple natural live yogurt has got fantastic natural bacteria in it that will be great for gut health.
Yeah, really, really good quality live natural yogurt without any added sugar. It's a really delicious, healthy food. So, that would be a great way to start.
Talking back to the sort of impact of diet on sort of general well-being, we obviously talked about sort of nutritional sort of health in terms of energy. How about behaviour? Do you see children coming in with concentration issues, behavioural issues, aggression issues, whatever it is, and an impact, a positive impact on them from what they're eating or improving their diet?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, again, the profile of children that I see tend to have some sort of anxiety or behavioural problems, or, you know, learning difficulties. And it's an area that we see makes a massive difference. So I would say that at the very basics, getting the blood sugar balancing right, like I mentioned previously, but also focusing on essential fats. So omega-3 specifically, which is, I'd say, without question, the most well-researched nutrient for cognitive function. Boosting omega-3 in children, it would be a...
So practically, how can you do that?
Yeah, well, again, the best source of omega-3 is oily fish. So that would be salmon, mackerel, sardines, pilchards. Possibly not every child's favourite food.
Pilchards, maybe not.
So we have some great recipes of easier ways to get those oily fish in, things like salmon, teriyaki salmon skewers and things
fish
like
cakes.
That, and fish cakes.
You can get it through other sources, not just fish?
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. Flaxseed and chia seeds are a really good source of omega-3.
Which you can sprinkle on cereal, any cereal.
Adding flax seeds to pancakes and muffins is a really good way. And adding it to porridge, again, great. But it's one thing that I probably recommend as a supplement most frequently, because children who are in need would need, you know,
quite a lot of it,
and they're likely to be the fussier eaters, so they would benefit from a supplement. And you can get ones now that don't taste fishy, and if needs be, can be mixed with a bit of smoothie and taken.
Is there one you recommend particularly that is good tasting?
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good ones on the market. I really like Bare Biology. I like their range because they also have a pregnancy omega-3 supplement, which has got the right balance of EPA and DHA specifically required for pregnancy. So they have, yeah, and then again, they have their superhero, which is for children, and then it changes again when you hit teens, because again, the profile of fatty acids, the needs are different. So I think theirs is really good, but there are some really great ones on the market now. Gone are the days, I think, of the scary, fishy tasting oil, thankfully.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And what about if you're sitting here listening to this, thinking, you know, my children are pretty healthy, which I kind of, I'm lucky enough to fall into that category. I mean, we eat relatively healthy at home. I enjoy sort of a healthy, balanced diet. But they definitely had fish fingers quite a lot. Not even fish fingers, chicken nuggets, even worse, over the holidays.
Sausages.
Exactly. Mm. All those things that probably aren't the best. Mm. Is it worth, you know, reviewing what you're giving your children if you fall into that category? What are the benefits of doing that? Even though they're well and, you know, there aren't any specific concerns, would you know, if I suddenly thought, well, let's think about a bit more about what they're eating, would I sort of notice the benefits?
I think it very much depends. I think it's great if they're already healthy, obviously, that's fab. You may find that when they go through a bit more of a challenging time, if they're going through a growth spurt or if they have a bit more of a tricky time at school, any exams, they would benefit from a boost in their nutrition. But you know, it's obviously something that you can do as a family, is try and, you know, try and be as healthy and keep them like that. You know, it's wonderful to hear that, because obviously in the work that I do, I sadly rarely see people who come in saying, I feel great and I just want to stay like this. So it's really lovely to hear
that. I did not mean to sound smug. I have to
remind you. Wonderful. It's lovely. No, it's lovely to hear that. And yeah, and I just think, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. And I think,
and also you're setting them up for life, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And it's all about educating children.
Absolutely.
To know from childhood what healthy eating pattern is.
Yeah, and I think once you reach a certain age, you know, they really do start to understand, and they like taking some responsibility as well. So you can have those conversations about what they're doing. You know, my son, he's really into his sport, and I can really engage him talking about nutrition and sport, and exactly setting them up for long-term health. You know, we see, you know, the foundations are set down for health, you know, very early on, and you know, chronic disease is certainly linked to patterns in childhood, so it's definitely worth putting the time and effort in earlier on.
And actually, even already in pregnancy.
I mean,
I was listening to a fascinating study a while ago on Radio 4 where they were looking at a population of a whole country that was having a famine. And because the records were kept so scrupulously, they were noticing the impact on the babies, on the children, and then as they went into middle age, and even then on the following generation, and there were higher incidences of long-term health issues, cancer, obesity, all these things that they could link to this period of, it was extreme starvation, but it just shows, you know, in the uterus, where you know, how already that those building blocks are started.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're, you know, learning more all the time about the importance of our, to go back to gut health, gut microbiome in pregnancy and beforehand. And I learned something fascinating the other day, that cells from our gut move into our breast tissue in the later stages of pregnancy to set us up to move the bacteria into the baby through breastfeeding. So I mean, there is so much that we're learning about all the time, and there's lots you can do, you know, very early on.
And it's never too late either, though.
No,
is it?
Absolutely not. And you know, children are brilliant. They're very generally very resilient. They bounce back quite quickly with some tweaks. So there's always things you can do. Don't feel that, oh, I've done nothing up till now. There's no point bothering. Because there's always.
But also, I was going to say that I generally think that as a parent, you kind of get to know the school year quite well. And I often think around this time of year, September time, I try and do a bit of an immune boost for them. So, you know, with the elderberry syrups, maybe some probiotics thrown in a smoothie, just around this time of year to help them go back into school, transition well from a really lazy, you know, over ice cream time. Winter's normally you hunker down, you're eating heavier food. It's, you know, important to really think about what's going in and, you know, staying cozy and snug at home. And when you go through into the spring, often that, you know, we find the illness really kicks up around that time. The kind of the air changes. You want to do another bit of an immune boost around springtime. We find so you kind of look. You can kind of look at the year.
In
summer's normally quite a relaxed time for illness for children. They're normally outside. There's normally very little. But you kind of can see. I find when everyone comes out of their kind of hibernation from winter, Christmas time, and it goes February-ish time, it's often another.
It's been a long winter.
Yeah.
I think something that 47% of us are deficient in vitamin D, so certainly in those spring months we're going to be feeling it.
And natural dietary sources of vitamin D, obviously, there are lots of.
Yes.
And it's in,
they are. I mean, definitely without question, the best source of vitamin D is from the sunshine.
Yeah.
And we're just not able to get that in this country between the months of October to April. But you can get vitamin D from mushrooms and some oily fish and milk. Milk is a good source of fat-soluble vitamins.
Yeah.
So.
And we're talking just cow's milk, whole cow's milk.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Eggs.
Yeah, and eggs are a brilliant source of vitamin D.
I mean, milk in itself is very nutritious for. I mean, there's a whole debate about milk.
Yes.
Generally speaking, is one of the most contentious drinks worldwide.
Yes.
But certainly nutritionally, it's fantastic as long as you know your child tolerates it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you know.
Which most people do.
I think the rate of cow's milk protein allergy is only 2-5%.
Absolutely.
Of babies, so it's very small. I mean, I do see children with some level of lactose intolerance.
Yeah.
Usually, it's because they've got a disruption in their gut going on.
It's transient, isn't it? They've had an infection and they're transient. They have a short period of time lactose intolerance.
Yes.
Very rare to get small babies with proper lactose intolerance.
Exactly. It's something I find that tends to appear a bit later on in childhood.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it usually appears around the late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
And actually pretty common among adults.
Yes.
Especially Asian and Afro-Caribbean.
Yeah, absolutely. He just can't break down the lactose.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those who can tolerate it, indeed, it is a very healthy food. It's I'd always recommend opting for organic milk where you can. But it is a good source of vitamin A, D, E and K, which are all fat-soluble vitamins. And you need the fat in the milk, hence the whole milk, to absorb those nutrients.
So you need whole milk as opposed to semi-skimmed milk.
Yeah, I would always recommend that. Where possible, my general advice would be to keep it as nature intended for it to be.
Fat is not a bad thing.
I often have, you know, children who don't like milk, don't want to eat yogurt, don't want to drink milk. And any tips of how to get milk and the goodness of milk into cooking or into children if they don't like the taste of it?
Smoothies would be quite good.
Smoothies are a great place to start.
Yeah.
You could mix sort of half milk, half kefir with a banana and frozen berries. We'll chat a bit about our love for our freezers, but frozen berries are something that we always have in our freezer.
Mm.
They're brilliant for making smoothies. So that would be a nice thing to try.
Yeah.
Initially.
In terms of practicality of sort of eating a little bit more healthy, I mean, I think a lot of mothers are kind of run off their feet anyway and think, oh, God, you know, totally rethinking how I feed my children and having not to buy the bird's eye anymore is going to be really difficult. But it's not as difficult as it might seem. Presumably half the point of the Cooking Them Healthy website is to show people what is healthy, what is good eating, but also how to achieve it practically so that you're not spending your
time. Yeah, I mean, we hope to inspire people. I mean, we all find, all of us have our own ruts and we all have our own, you know, things that we instinctively cooked, which we then get quite bored of. So we definitely hope to inspire a bit.
Yeah.
But that doesn't have to be impossible. That's definite. I think it's just a little bit of preparation. Freezers are amazing. I do freeze a lot of my food. I'm doing things in batches.
So when you say preparation, do you sort of have a sort of cooking morning once a week, or
sometimes?
What do you mean
really, when I might have a gap, which doesn't, you know, can, like all of us, isn't that often, I would do a bit of a batch cook. So yeah, ideally it'd be once a week. Then you can build your freezer up, if you see what I mean.
So you're in double quantity, at least double.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make something for the freezer where you can when you're buying the ingredients.
Yeah, so you can have, you know, a well-stocked freezer. You know that you've got really good staples in your store cupboard. You know, I mean, I often freeze things like rice just so I can have that to hand. People always worry.
You've made yourself.
I've just cooked batches. Yeah, just, you know, as I was saying, chicken carcasses.
You can freeze everything, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, eggs aren't brilliant at freezing, to be honest. They never come out the same consistency. But yeah, being organised with your freezer is definitely going to help you. Having a good store cupboard really does help you too.
Even sort of chopped vegetables and then freezing them
works quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can buy them most of the time done for you, so you don't even have to do it yourself.
Herbs you can freeze.
Yep.
Yeah, spices. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, I think yes, if you can find a little bit of time to do that, so it doesn't have to be fresh from scratch every day, because you know often you feel that you're just literally living in the kitchen, which can be quite exhausting. And also having a good repertoire that you know and you know that you find quite easy to do. So a lot of problems with people generally in the kitchen and why mothers don't like it so much is because they don't have the confidence. And if you know that your kids like various dishes, you know, keep on doing that and just try and find a few of inspiring things every so often. Most of the recipes, in fact, I'd say all of the recipes that we do are targeted at the family. So it's not just having to make one meal for just the kids. Because actually then you're in the kitchen doubly as long and it's exhausting. So yeah, I think just being a little bit organised, taking the pressure off yourself, because, you know, we all have... you know, crazy days and things like that.
Just need to do what you can do.
Do what you can do. And also...
what about defrosting? So, you know, if you freeze in sort of portion-sized pots, you can pop it in the microwave and defrost it. I know some people have views about microwaves and whether those might damage the nutrient content of food. Mm. But obviously it's much more practical. And
Yes, it can be, definitely.
I used to have a microwave before we moved, and it was like I totally relied on it, and now I don't have one. It's just a little bit more organisation, I guess. I mean, I just would basically take something out the night before. You know, if I would slightly think about what I might feed them the day before and take it out. But otherwise, yeah, I shove it in the microwave, and
if you're going to be eating a frozen meal that you've cooked from scratch, and it means cooking it in the microwave, I'd always recommend that. Than opting for a ready meal instead. Definitely.
And even if it's just things like, you know, reducing the sugar content and the salt content, because those are two things that we become habituated in terms of our taste. You know, it's really interesting. I remember so well having sugar in my tea when I was little, and then one day I decided I wasn't going to have it. And then another day I put some milk from my son's cereal in my tea, just thought I'd save. And there was obviously a bit of sugar from the cereal, and I could not drink that tea.
Yeah.
It was amazing how quickly you become
And when you look through a recipe book, you know, when we started doing Cooking Healthy, I was amazed at how much sugar people put into baked goods. You really don't need anywhere near as much sugar as most of the cakes
that
they're out there.
You know, they do. Cupfuls of sugar.
Yeah, it will taste very sweet, but it's to do with your kind of levels of sweetness. It's amazing how they come down relatively quickly. But you can have really, you know, as a child, we used to have like condensed milk squeezy tubes. My mum, you know, it's very French. My father used to kind of bring this as a treat, and that's... it's overwhelmingly sweet, but at the time sweet, I was like, oh, it's great.
Well, I remember going to visit our grandparents, and our treat was to get a sugar cube dipped in coffee, and that would be our treat.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean,
we survived.
Yes. Yeah.
We, and your teeth survived, obviously, that's good. We
haven't seen them that often.
We always try and reduce the sugar content, and we use a lot of fruit in our recipes, and mashed bananas and apples and pears. So you're boosting the nutrient intake and fiber and reducing the sugar. And Georgie quite often she'll keep retesting a recipe and say, I'm just going to try it with a bit less sugar. I think we can get away with less. And I would, you know, like most things, particularly with children, don't do anything really rash. You know, you're just going to send everyone into a blind panic, but gradually reducing the sugar. And you then will start to find things do just taste a bit too much.
And that's the thing. So going back to your summer holiday, you'll find that your sugar levels have just gone up. You just need to start lowering them down again. And that can be things like, if you're going to make a pudding, do a crumble with all that lovely fresh fruit there is out right now, but just doesn't need anywhere near as much sugar. And it won't even bash anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and if you use eating apples rather than cooking apples, which traditionally a crumble would be, you won't have to sweeten them with with sugar.
Yeah.
You know, and stewed apples is a fab thing for children to eat.
And also they enjoy making it. I mean, other weekend we went down to the country and picked some apples, and I gave the children knives to cut it with, and then we had an amazing weekend. Mm. I said, "What was your favourite part of the weekend?" Cutting the apples.
Yes. So my son has a brilliant knife. I'll try and find the name if anyone's interested, but it's safe for children to use. It's serrated, but it's quite blunt, so he has to saw away a bit, but he loves using it, any opportunity. And he's not, you know, particularly interested in cooking, but the chopping, and he'll always be more interested in eating the food if he's involved.
And he's, what, six?
He's six, nearly seven, yes. So it's absolutely get them involved where you can. I mean, I know Georgie's children are constantly on the work surfaces getting mixed.
My middle one loves making bread, and he, you know, we have a little story about how he did, what the whole process is behind it. But, you know, anything, picking fruit, going to get blackberries, anything seasonal, especially because they love it.
And getting tomatoes, I can see you growing tomatoes here. I mean, I'm sure they enjoy picking the tomatoes. And
absolutely.
And they just eat them like sweets.
Mm. And I think, you know, to keep, you know, to not make that break too quickly. So, for example, you know, we're trying to get out of the processed cereals and into something a little bit more whole and healthy. But actually, I did put a little bit of honey on a cereal the other day because I thought I'd rather my son eat that, you know, lovely, seedy, nutty cereal that has no sugar in than just not eat it at all and stick to the...
Well, yeah, and there's nothing worse than cooking an entire meal and your children going, "I don't like it." And if a little bit of, say, ketchup or something is going to make all the difference, then pick your battle. But
and are some better ketchups out there as well, which have less sugar. And there is one particularly that's sweetened just with apples, actually, rather than. But for some children, that will be too much of a departure. Making gradual changes, like you said, is definitely the way forward, and give them some kind of control in it as well, so they feel that. They're having a bit of a say in it. I enjoy looking through websites and recipe books with my son, and he tells me what he'd like me to cook. So I'll try. My aim is one new thing a week, but realistically it doesn't happen. But he loves looking through our website and saying, "Oh, that looks good, and that looks good," and you know, which changes with the seasons as well. So you can...
Because I think that's going to be the problem. Most people listening to this podcast are going to think, "Well, this is great. I'm really inspired. I'm going to go out and stock my cupboard and my freezer and have all these amazing things to give my children." And the children are going to resist it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a month you'll be back to where you were.
Well, that's ultimately what you've got to try and do, which is one of the hardest things of all, is changing little habits. And if you can focus on which ones you want to change, you might find, you know, that you'll be able to stick at them. As I said, I do think freezing does make a big difference. Like the other day, my daughter's she's been quite fussy generally, and I'm not really wanting to have too many dairy things at the moment because her skin's flaring up a bit, so she's got to be slightly different to the others, which is a pain. So I've done a whole batch of our pancakes for her, and I just take them one out every morning, defrost it, and she has that. So it's trying to kind of...
Well, we know that children love things like pancakes and smoothies, so we sort of work with that and try and boost them and make them as nutritious as possible. And the pancakes we do are brilliant. They like Georgie said, they freeze brilliantly. You can just toast them in the morning, so that's quite a good breakfast option.
And also on our website we have our
are they sort of buttermilk pancakes, or how do you...
They're actually spelt flour. You can use any flour you wanted to, but spelt's slightly better to easier to digest, and most like white flour, and so it's less processed ultimately, so it's better, a little bit better for their tummies. So it's white spelt, and you can use various different fillings, but I grate, mash a banana, put a couple of eggs in, maybe a bit of cinnamon and a little bit of baking powder, mix it all up, and then fry in batches, and they turn out to be those kind of American fluffy thick pancakes which kids normally like.
Also practically you can put those in the toaster.
And the other thing is that people always go, "Well, don't we know that they're great, but you're going to want a load of maple syrup with them." And yes, to a certain extent you will want a sweetener. I mean, you know, you don't want to take that moment away from a child, but we found that you can just put a little bit on the end of a knife or a spatula, whatever you might have, and just rub it into the pancake. It's just as good, rather than literally creating a lake of maple syrup, which is not going to be good for anybody.
Anyway,
it's also very expensive maple syrup. Yeah. The children don't know any different, and they don't care. That's absolutely fine for them. But I was going to say, in terms of trying to keep your inspiration up and you know, keeping your focus, it's, as I said, we always all have our ruts and we all go to our go-to recipes. We have a page which is your kind of essential shopping basket. And in there is, if you're going to forget... you know, everything that we're talking about, just try and remember a few of the things on the shopping basket. So there's broccoli, sweet potato, nuts,
salmon
or oily fish, eggs, berries. Oh, those are, you know, pretty normal staples. But if you get those into your shopping basket every week, you're giving your children and your family really, really good boosted food. I mean, any vegetables are going to be good for you. You know, most things you're going to, most people will be having in the dark will be great. But if you can really focus on those ones particularly.
And I would recommend looking at it in the context of a week as well, because we all have bad days and busy days and we fall down and it doesn't go to plan. But look at it over the course of a week and you'll think, actually, I haven't done too badly. Or if you have had one of those weeks, you know, make up for it at the weekend and make sure you, you know, try and eat a meal together, try and cook something that you feel is really nutritious. You know, just do what you can and take the pressure off.
And it doesn't need to be complicated. As, you know, if you can shove a sweet potato in the oven. You can make an omelette. It doesn't need to be something that's taken an hour to make.
Or be that expensive. Because, of course, a lot of the things we've been talking about, you know, it sound like it might be quite expensive to buy some of these things. But
Absolutely.
Broccoli and sweet potatoes.
And that's why we have a lot of recipes on our website that don't have meat, because meat can be quite expensive. And we
don't need it every day.
No, we don't. Definitely don't need it every day. And I think we have become very much stuck in that habit generally. So, and we typically use ingredients that are easy to source. You don't have to go and
get it from any of your local supermarkets.
Yeah, travel too far and wide to get these ingredients. So a well-stocked store cupboard. And if you do online shopping, which I know is a saviour for many mothers, you can just do your favourites and you have those on repeat.
And actually, going back to the meat, the point about meat, we don't need it so often. I'd say that's one of the hardest things that most people find is finding recipes that aren't meat, because we know it's instinctively chicken of some description, sausages.
Well, people think of protein as meat.
Exactly. Yes, meat, spaghetti bolognese, and you know, and they're going to get protein every day at school. Before you know it, they're having meat twice if you're coming home with it. So it's actually, we've got a few recipes on there that are meat-free. It could be quite difficult to think of them on your feed.
And again, I would encourage the small changes. So if you are making those changes to more meat-free, you know, don't necessarily do it all at once. You can do half and half initially. You know, children do tend to panic when you make really big changes. They like familiarity and routine. So just, you know, slowly, slowly. Much like the fermented food, actually. I'll probably start with that slowly as well.
Children are notoriously fuss eaters, and that I think is the thing that I struggle with. My children have their repertoire of five things they eat, which is probably enough for them to subsist, but I also feel that it's one of my responsibilities as a mother to introduce. I mean, I love eating, I love exploring new flavors, going out for dinner to new restaurants, and that kind of thing with my husband is one of the things that we love doing. And I feel that if we don't show them that and introduce them to that, it's a real shame. How do you do that, though? Because my children are so resistant when it comes to sort of new flavours. And it's almost like that unless they love it as much as a chicken nugget, they're not going to eat it.
Yes.
And it's really difficult for me to describe to them that, you know, they just need to be a bit more.
But it can be it can always be quite hit and miss. You know, you might find you're going to go to a restaurant that you think they're definitely going to love, and then you get there and they don't like it. So you never really know. But I think just your excitement and passion generally that is in you about being loving food, I think normally rubs off on children. And their palates do change. Sometimes they won't like something now and, you know, give it not very long, they will change. Think back to maybe what you ate at their age compared to what you eat now. My palate was very, you know, was not huge at that at a young age. I've learned a lot through taste and not in more the recent years. So I wouldn't put too much pressure on as well, because it's not always necessary.
Well, it also makes then mealtimes a real battle, which, I mean, half the point, I think, of a mealtime is sitting around as a family and having a conversation, finding out each other's days and in a lovely, relaxed, and if you're sort of constantly shoving food down their faces. And
no,
saying,
it becomes a battle. Yeah, I mean, I think eating as a family is a really good way. You know, children definitely learn by example. So, you know, watching you doing what you do, you know, it's definitely going to be a great thing. And just consistency as well. You know, studies show that you need to introduce a new food to a child between 10 and 15 times. Many of us have given up before that third time. We're like, I can't be bothered to try that anymore. So keep trying just a small amount, and again, it doesn't have to be a complete sea change. It can just be a small amount, and just encourage them to have one mouthful and then go back to the familiar food that they like. It's a long process and a slow process, but just keep going, don't give up and think, oh, my child's never going to eat this.
And I guess also engaging them in the conversation that we're having, that, yeah. you know, nutrition is really important.
Yeah.
This is not about filling their belly, and it doesn't matter whether it's chicken nuggets or quinoa. Mm.
And making decisions themselves, yeah. I think, yeah. is really big.
I mean, I remember telling them when they were really little, actually, I'd made up this story that, you know, in food were fighters, and fighters went into your body to fight all the
yes,
nasty
lovely.
Bacteria.
Mm.
So it was a conversation that they could understand, and they understood that it was more than just filling their bellies up, and they did need to think about that. And that's obviously age appropriate. You're going to change that
yes.
as they get older. And you don't want them to get too obsessed. You know, there's definitely a sort of over healthily yeah. eating
Absolutely.
Fad that becomes a bit more about control than anything else.
Yeah.
But an appreciation that we are what we eat. And actually, there is quite a lot of truth in that.
Yeah. And you don't want things to become the forbidden fruit. You know, either. So I think you've got to be careful about
that's something I see a lot of. You know, when something is absolutely forbidden, I see children growing up a few years later. You know,
yes,
it's fine when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 because they do what their parents say, and then they get a bit of control in their life, and they walk to school, and,
yes.
and they're the ones who are stuffing their face with Haribo. And
absolutely. I mean, for example, I mean, at a child's birthday party, I mean, yes, initially I did find them quite difficult because you know that's when all the you know scary foods come out, and rightly so. It's a birthday party, but now I let them completely enjoy it, and I'll just know to make sure that they're going to have a good you know tea that day, and also maybe give them a really good protein snack before you go to the party, so they don't have that urge to
stuff themselves.
But talking about you know engaging children in the conversation, I think it is really important. And my son, being at the age where he's losing his first teeth, and it's quite a big deal for him, it's all quite exciting, these new teeth coming through, so he's quite obsessed with going to the dentist. And well, that's how the conversation about sugar came up, and he just thinks I'm quite boring because I'm always telling him not to eat sugar. But we started talking about why and how important it is for these new teeth, and also getting him to understand how much sugar is in certain foods. And I'm going to be going into his school and talking to the children about that, and getting them to tell me how much they think is in each food. And just, yeah, giving them some responsibility, I think, is really helpful, rather than just no, no, no all the time, being the bad cop all the time, because they just switch off.
I think we as parents are surprised often how much sugar is in food,
yes.
and actually thinking about it and quantifying it makes us take a step back.
Yes, and when you hear about it in grams, it doesn't necessarily conjure up a visual image. It's quite hard to picture that. So, so looking at it in terms of, you know, sugar cubes, I find quite helpful.
Because a sugar cube is how many grams?
It's one teaspoon. So the recommendation in grams for children aged between 4 and 7, the new government guidelines is between 19 and 30 grams of sugar a day, which, like I said, for me doesn't mean a huge amount, but it's the equivalent of 6 teaspoons of sugar, so 6 sugar cubes.
And just to put it into perspective, I mean, apple juice, for example.
Yeah, so apple juice, which you generally think is quite a wholesome drink, 250 mils of that, which is, you know,
like a carton.
Yeah, is that's 6 teaspoons of sugar, up to 6 teaspoons of sugar. And some fruit yogurts on the market, they can be up to 4 teaspoons of sugar. So I think you need to be really,
savvy.
Yeah, and just start reading labels as well. Can be. Yeah,
well, thinking about it, because actually your child is probably just as happy eating a yogurt that doesn't have that much sugar
yes.
in it.
Or just having some, we're a big fan of compots. So having some natural yogurt, which we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, supporting gut health with some delicious fruit compote.
Yeah.
I mean, this morning, even before I left and got the train, I managed to cook some frozen berries from the freezer and mix it with some chia seeds and a tiny bit of honey. And my children had that on porridge. But there was no added sugar to that. But they thought that was quite a treat. So,
well, and apple juice, you know, you can easily water it down.
Absolutely, I'd really recommend watering it down.
Don't help out. Really
and actually, you often say that if you're wanting to check the back of a packet, the top three ingredients is if sugar comes up as one of the top three.
Ingredients are in quantity order.
Yes.
So So the first ingredient is how that's the takes up the majority.
Ingredient.
Yeah. And you'll be really surprised to see how often sugar crops up in the first three ingredients. And they're quite clever as well. They disguise the names. So on our website, we've got a list of the other names that sugar comes up as, because they hope people aren't going to notice.
Which are what? Sucrose.
And glucose syrup. And there's endless.
That's so wrong. There should be some kind of uniform. I mean, that's surely an obligation for clear labelling that they should.
But they would argue that it is down as a sugar. So it's definitely start checking labels. I would become aware of that.
So your website is obviously full of great ideas. I was having a look earlier. I particularly like the idea of the one pot chicken. I think, you know, for me, a big part of cooking is if it then requires 5 pans
yes.
and chopping boards and graters and all of this stuff.
Too much.
It's too much. You know, I'm very happy to cook. I'm not so keen on the washing up. So I quite like the idea of the one pot chicken.
Yes. Well, that's exactly why we did it. And a lot of our recipes are either pies, one pot dishes, curries, they can all be done as one, and then saved for later if you're going to be eating later, not with your children. Yeah, that's exactly what
I did. Soups too. You know, my children often will have soup at the end of the day because they've had a decent meal at soup at school, and they'll have soup and some bread and some fruit.
And it's a brilliant weekend lunch as well. Yeah, soup's brilliant, and you can use the bone stock as a base for that.
What are your favourite recipes? What are your go-to recipes that you find yourself with?
One pot chicken I actually did on Saturday for me and some friends. It wasn't even for the children. So the one pot is quite a good one actually, and it all went, so that was a goodie.
The coconut chicken curry is my personal favourite.
You do that a lot.
Yeah, my husband thinks that's a real treat. He's just, and it takes about 10 minutes to make.
Really?
Yeah, and that's a brilliant one as well if you want to be serving dinner for friends. You just add some toasted flaked almonds on the top and some chopped coriander and they'll be very impressed. And children love it. Coconut milk's really sweet, and it's got delicious spices to it. It's not hot spicy, so it's delicious. That's a really good one to try.
Yeah, and I like the Persian chicken. It's sweet, but I love it. It's quite. I remember we went to a cafe and I actually had Persian chicken when we were there, and I just didn't think for a moment the children would eat it because it was kind of brown and didn't look, you know, it was just chickeny kind of goo, and they all ate this Persian chicken, and I went home and recreated what I thought was what we had, and ever since then they just love it. I think it's because it's got the kind of dried fruit in it, so it's got that sweetness.
It's quite fragrant, isn't it?
Yeah,
they do really enjoy it.
And favourite vegetarian?
Lentil shepherd's pie.
Yeah, the lentil shepherd's pie is a real winner.
It's just one of those, yeah, trust me, if you make it, it's just one of those ones that you don't have to necessarily put all the ingredients in. Actually, recently I didn't, and I think one of the ingredients on our website is parsnip, didn't have that, so I just put celery and carrot in. But it's just really substantial, nice, and
it's ultimate comfort food.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that's a really good point, actually. I think a lot of people are really intimidated by recipes and think, there's one thing that's missing there, and I can't make it. But actually, most things can be substituted.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd really encourage you to be brave. Yeah, exactly. You can swap in and out different vegetables. Just yeah, I mean, our recipes, I'd say, are fairly foolproof. Really, you know, you can't.
But with recipes in general, I mean, you're the cook. It's not like a science experiment. You don't have to be following everything.
As long as you have a vague idea of where it's going to end up,
then
you'll be fine. I think the only time you need to be a little bit more on it is when you're doing baked things, because normally there's a bit more alchemy to it.
Yeah.
But no, generally speaking, if you're making a chicken one pot, change the vegetables. You know, don't make it what you like. If you don't like parsnip, don't put it in.
Yeah. Use a duck.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Be experimental. So, yeah, and you know, you can always contact us and ask us. We're there, so... No, I think it's having confidence.
Brave. Don't feel like you've got to be limited to what you've got in the cupboard, the fridge.
Yeah.
It's been so great chatting to both of you. I'm inspired. My tummy is also rumbling after sort of talk of lentil shepherd's pie and coconut chicken curry. Delicious. Do check out the Cooking Them Healthy website. It's cookingthemhealthy.com. You can just search Cooking Them Healthy. Are you guys on Instagram? Can people follow you on Instagram? Yeah. What's your Instagram handle?
Yeah, it's at Cook Them Healthy.
Yeah.
You also do workshops, don't you? So you'll come and demo how to cook various things, and it's quite a nice sort of social thing to do with maybe other kind of mum friends.
Yes, absolutely. We started our workshops to kind of showcase our supercharged recipes, which focus on boosting specific
ailments.
Supporting specific health issues. We started with our immune boosting, as I said, and then we've also got brain boosting, which focuses a lot on cognitive function, and then we've got skin nourishing and gut health. So we typically do the immune boosting workshops in the autumn and the spring, and we've been recently doing the digestive health workshops, which is brilliant because it introduces people to fermented foods, which can be a bit daunting, and we show them how they can make them themselves and talk about the benefits. And it's a really enjoyable, fun, relaxed day, and you get to taste loads of food
Do you get to eat it all at the end? Yeah. Do you come out full?
Yeah. I cook everything in front of everybody, and they always get everything is tasted. Then we have lunch, and it's really nice. It's normally mums, and we just have a good old chat, and it stops anyone being alienated by how difficult something could be. Most mums leave, send us photos of their new shopping basket as soon as they've left.
Yeah, I think
and get quite inspired.
People feel quite motivated by them, which is great.
Yeah. If you see something being done, you know it's doable.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
Whilst giving, we're chatting and...
giving people a little bit, we were talking about it earlier, of empowerment, feeling like they can actually make a bit of a difference, especially if your child's ill and making, you know, it's not nice seeing your baby's ill at any time, but making sure that you're doing something that, you know, makes a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
It's a really nice feeling.
And Jo, if people are listening and want to chat to you one-on-one about specific issues, where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, I see clients at my clinic, which is based in Berkshire, but I also do Skype consultations. So if you're interested in a consultation or having a chat, you can contact me via the Nature Doc website, which is www.naturedoc.co.uk.
Well, we'll put all these websites on the episode notes, but thank you both so much for joining us. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Parenthood. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us. It really does help people find us. And if you're enjoying our podcast, do spread the word about The Parenthood amongst your friends. Word of mouth is a very powerful resource to us. We're also always on the lookout for more podcast ideas, so do get in touch if you want us to cover a specific subject. The best way is Instagram, we're at theparent.hood, or email us at thebumpclass, we're info@thebumpclass.com. But in the meantime, from all of us here in the studio, thanks for listening and goodbye.